Hello and welcome to the Dream Freedom Beauty Podcast. I'm your hostess, Natalie Ross, and our guest this week is Money Witch, Jessie Susanna Karnatz. And she and I have such a great time talking about money, and I know y'all are going to love this and be fed by it. So, oh yes, enjoy the show. And if it's nourishing to you, remember, share it with a friend and make sure you, if you shout us out on Instagram, tag us at Dream Freedom Beauty, and I'll check you out and say thank you. Enjoy the show. Welcome to the show, Jessie Susanna. So happy to have you here today.
Hi, happy to be here.
Cool. So before we begin our money talk today, do you want to lead us on an invocation of whatever style you would like?
Yeah, I just want to say a prayer for us. So to thank Spirit for bringing us to this moment in this perfect constellation. It's a miracle that we as a group are all alive in this moment, connecting through energetic waves. And I really want to thank you for inviting me into this conversation around money and spirituality. And I want to thank all of the listeners for inviting me into their conversation around money. It's an extremely intimate topic. So I want to really say that I feel honored and that I hold that intimacy very preciously. And I want to invite all of our angels, ancestors, guides, friends, lovers to support us in our journey and our work and our path forward around financial healing and spiritual right path in this world. So amen.
So be it. Beautiful. Thank you. Calling in those money angels. Mm-hmm. Cool. So, you know, as I mentioned in the intro, you're known as the Money Witch. You go by Jessie Susanna, but you're known as the Money Witch. And, you know, I think that's so exciting and fun because blending the practical with the magical is something that I know that me and many of my listeners absolutely must have in their lives. Like, you know, just the purely practical muggle side doesn't work for us. And it's so cool to have you here where you're this blend of that full spectrum. So I'm curious, just for a little background, just, you know, how did you become the Money Witch? Were you always the Money Witch and you just realized it, or did you steer yourself into that? Like, how did that be?
Well, it's a little bit of a lot. I mean, do you want the long story?
Give us the cliff notes.
Okay. It's one of those things. Like, I like to be, you know, I do a thing mostly called intuitive financial coaching, and sometimes say, you know, people are like, well, what is that? And I'm like, I made it up, you know?
So, love it.
Like, it's a thing that feels like, I don't want to say the culmination because that makes it sound like it's the end, but basically, like, it's the synthesis of just almost like everything I've ever done, like every random thing I've ever done. I feel like sort of some of the origins of it came out of, in, I guess it would have been, I don't even know, 2004. I was working at this kind of famous / infamous peep show in San Francisco called The Lusty Lady. And it's at that time it was what's it called? Like unionized. It was one of the only like successful unionization efforts of exotic dancers in the country or the world.
Cool.
And then we all got laid off. They were going to shut down the business. Wow. And we organized to buy it as a worker-owned cooperative. So that was my first introduction to business. I just kind of got like thrown in. I was just like, okay, we're going to just like start a board of directors and like write articles of incorporation and buy this $1 million business and just like do it, you know?
Cool.
And so I just, you know, then I'm going to like become a manager and I'm going to be on a board of directors and all these things that I just didn't,
I don't know, I was 23, so I didn't have any like basis in, but was just like, yeah, I could just do this. So that's kind of the basis. And then I started, you know, many years down the line from that, I started working in like more broadly in the worker-owned cooperative community and got interested in finances for worker-owned cooperatives. I'm interested in kind of like basically accessible, kind of like culturally competent financial services. So that had been around worker co-op community, around the sex worker community. And then, you know, it's just kind of flowed. But I had another business in about 2008, and doing bookkeeping, doing some taxes, et cetera, mostly worker co-op. And I just sort of realized, like, I'm got basically much more interested in, like, why people don't manage their finances well. You know, like I would do bookkeeping and I would go to people's businesses or organizations, you know, you go like once a month and you're like, okay, did you do the like five things I told you would like make your life much better, you know? And then people are like, no.
Yeah,
and I'm like,
of course.
That's very interesting. Like I just got very interested in like, why don't people, you know, it's not that hard, by which I don't mean to like belittle or, you know, make small like,
you're just speaking truth here. It's not that
hard.
Yeah,
how difficult it can be. You know, but people are like, I don't know how, you know, I don't know how to budget. And I'm like, well, it's like information about budgeting is available. Do you know what I'm saying? Like,
right, you can just Google it.
Yeah, exactly. Or there's like apps or there's like books or, you know, and for most people, it doesn't have as much to do with the actual accessibility to, you know, kind of financial 101 skills. It's more about just like what's going on under the surface, which could be like any number of things.
Like emotional. You know,
it's emotional, spiritual, ancestral, you know, created and influenced by, you know, cultural colonization, like just, you know, misogyny, just everything, right? So it's right. Like, and going in and doing that emotional / spiritual untangling is, in my observation, like almost essential. It's almost essential to be doing that process around your finances parallel to any practical work you're going to do, or you'll essentially kind of undo or sabotage the practical work that you're doing because, you know, there's like a lack of understanding of motivation. I mean, it's the same in like intimacy or, you know, like anything, right? Like so many things.
I feel like if we ended the conversation right there and people just listened to that five times and took it to heart, then they would change their lives.
It's like period dot. Okay, the end.
Right? It's so true. And that's like why I mentioned in the beginning that, you know, we need the practical, but we also need the magical, and the much of the magical is that emotional healing and that emotional work is that's like the magic to me. And it, you know, extends into the spirit world and such, but like that, like I totally get it. And in my life, I never made any movement forward until I accepted that as well and incorporated emotional healing into every single aspect of whatever I was doing. So thank you for just saying it so clearly. So yeah, keep going. I just got so excited about this.
No, I'm really into it. I mean, I could trip on that for a while. I think it's like a dimension, you know, like the emotional and spiritual dimensions are always present. And, you know, you cannot believe in them or you cannot be like tapped into them, but they're there, mm-hmm. you know? So the kind of more layers of impact you can have on your behavior, like the more, you know, through like working through multiple layers, just the more long lasting and holistic it's going to be. So, but anyway, so I got interested in like why that wasn't happening. And I got interested in sort of what I could do to facilitate that happening for people alongside the practical skills. And you know, life, I got pregnant, I got really sick, I had a baby, et cetera, down the road. I got divorced, we got evicted, which is, you know, that was in 2012 in San Francisco, getting no fault evicted. not uncommon. So, but there was like a big, like, kind of life shakeup for me in 2012. And I ended up, you know, needing to take individual responsibility for my life and get it together. You know, basically I was like a single mom in, you know, living in one of the most like expensive, I mean, I think it might be the most expensive place in the city, in the country, you know,
it
I don't
is.
Know. So, you know, with essentially like I hadn't worked in several years and, you know, I don't have a college degree. I had a very like varied work background. And I just was like, okay, I have to just do something for myself in some sort of way. And I started towards the end of 2013, I started two different businesses at the same time. One is Money Witch and one was, like a postpartum doula practice. And, Money Witch just really took off. You know, I just listened to the feedback. So Money Witch really took off. My doula work is something that I basically only do for family at this point. And yeah, I just sort of let my business organism do what it was going to do. And it's been in steady growth since then. So I'm coming up close to 5 years in business. And, yeah, just exploring, always exploring. Like, I feel like I'm always exploring what is this business and, you know, what is it going to do next? And, it's exciting to me because I do business coaching. So it's like exciting and interesting to me to kind of like coach my own business along. I'm like a huge business and money nerd. I love radical small business. So,
I'm just loving this because I feel like the whole approach you're taking is exactly the kind of approach that me and anyone who listens to this show probably really can benefit from. It's because we don't have that in the mainstream, in the status quo. It's not like follow the flow and just listen and be practical. You know, like you're combining so many of the things that make it possible that, you know, mainstream society has just said, oh, don't listen to the emotional, don't follow the flow, you have to check the boxes. And you're just like here to prove, like not even here to prove, but you've just naturally become an example of, oh, follow the flow, combine these things, it can work. Like I love that. That's like the, it's just so excited. I'm just really excited, obviously.
It's funny to me because I feel like when you kind of push past that sort of like middle mainstream into actually like super successful business practices, it always loops back around and gets kind of wacky and spiritual.
Right.
And, you know, and metaphysical and, you know, like all of the, you know, CEOs and, you know, any like really wacky business leader, like anyone who's had like supernatural success, I mean, is like operating on a supernatural plane ultimately. So I think, you know, there's a lot of like meditation and spirituality that kind of gets promoted in the business world, but for some reason, like there's a chunk of space in the middle where it gets lost, right? Where it seems really weird. But then it's like, if you want to, like, you know, then there's all these things like, oh, if you want to, you know, harness the power of success, like meditate in the morning, you know, and then go to the gym and then, you know, whatever it is, take a day off once a week, or, you know, these things that are like ultimately spiritual concepts, kind of getting like repackaged by like wealthy men.
I know, right?
Yes. So let's just stick with it. Like it's true. We know it's true. You know, there's like everything that's being reclaimed. It's just, I don't know. Like anyone who doesn't feel like there's a spiritual or emotional element to their like work or business life, like they could feel like that, I guess. But I'm just like, okay, that's just not true. Like, I don't believe you.
So, I know.
You know, just staying centered in like what we know is true. Is ultimately gonna, you know, make our businesses so much more successful.
Right. And what I hear you speaking here too is that we don't need to fragment ourselves. We don't need to hide our spiritual selves in the little broom closet we can, and then go to work. Like maybe at right this very moment, that's the safest thing for someone to do. But there's an invitation to start if someone's listening and they're not fully allowing their magical spiritual selves to blend in and bleed into the rest of their lives. Like, why not? You know, it doesn't have to be this fragmented, segmented thing in your life. It can actually bleed into everything, and it's already there. Actually, it's like just waking up to how it's there and owning it and working with that instead of trying to just like suppress. I don't know if that makes sense, but
yeah, it's just yeah. normal.
Yeah, it's just normal. Yeah.
It's normal. Like having feelings is normal, you know?
Yeah.
Like being impacted by like the energies around you is normal. And, you know, wanting to be intentional and mindful about that, or like take charge of your like experience as an energetic emotional creature, you know, to me that's like what quote unquote magic is. You know, like that's normal. Mm-hmm. Just feels normal to me.
Totally. And like we're so, as just human beings in nature on earth, as consciousness in form, we're so powerful, and I think people forget that. And so I'm curious, you know, I think like we mentioned in the beginning, there's so many people can go read about, maybe we'll step into some of this in a little bit too, but people can read about the really practical steps of managing money and business. And I would actually like to hear some in a little while, but I think what's not talked about as much, or what is talked about, but from a really maybe bypassy sort of way, is the more magical side. And I guess what I'm getting at here is, you know, when you looked at, you know, why, when you asked the question, why don't people manage their money well, and you looked at what's going on under the surface, and you saw it was this emotional and spiritual stuff going on, and you wanted to know how to help them, what happened next? How did, what, where did that take you?
I mean, it just took me into doing what I do now. I mean, it's kind of hard to explain. Well, okay, it's hard slash actually so easy to explain like what I do and how I ended up doing it, because I literally just deeply trusted what I knew to be true in that time. So I, you know, like I started having this, you know, I was having this kind of life crisis. And in that time, I really kind of reconnected with a different level of my spirituality that I hadn't been actively in touch with in a while.
As tower card experiences will, right?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I was like a pretty spiritual kid and teenager, and, you know, it wasn't like a new thing for me. And I was pretty religious. In that time, I'm Jewish, and I was like, had been pretty actively religious for about 10 years, you know, in a pretty metaphysical, spiritually leaning sort of way. But there was just something about that time that I, you know, I felt like a real like stepping into my power, and but it was pretty casual in this way of like I started seeing some more, you know, like healers, psychic readers, astrologers, tarot readers, and I have just always gotten my readings in this way where I just have a feeling about someone, like, oh, this person has something they're supposed to tell me.
Yeah.
And then I just book the appointment and I go in and, you know, they say like, what do you want to talk about? And I'm like, I don't know. I think there's something that you're supposed to tell me. And then they're like, yeah, I do have something, you know, and then it's just like, they just tell me and I'm like, cool. Okay. And that's like, that leads me down my path. And I just really trust that. And I just realized like, oh, that's what I do. You know, like people sometimes ask me a lot of questions about my sessions, or, you know, like, what's it going to be like? And what are we going to do? And I just literally like, I believe that if you feel like you are supposed to have an appointment with me, then that is true. And I have something to tell you, you know, and I channel information in my sessions. So it's like, we talk about practical financial things. I use my intuition. I use my emotional intelligence and I channel. And in the process of that, like, we untangle what is going on under the surface of people's finances. And so part of it, I feel like I'm in control of, and part of it I'm not in control of. Mm-hmm. But I just know that it works and I just see it working. And it's just sort of always been like that. I just started doing some kind of business coaching, and I honestly don't know. Like, I honestly don't know how I started doing it. I literally just was like, this is a thing. I'm going to do it. I'm doing it. I still do it. And I'm really good at it. And I, you know, I honestly am not totally sure. I think really just that confidence of saying, like, I just believe myself.
Yeah.
And I just believed myself in that moment, you know?
And I hear this whole underlying thread. I mean, it sounds very clear to me when I hear you saying this, because I've worked in a sort of similar manner in my life. But just to really clarify, I think that the underlying point here is that you just trusted. And that's kind of what we need in order to take off the lid of just the practical, like, logical pathway and understand what's going on beneath the surface, because that is that where you become that hollow bone and just trust what's coming through, so you can get to the heart of what's really happening in a situation, whether it's someone's money or business or relationship or health or whatever it is. It's like, that's that trust. So I'm curious, what are your, you know, not everyone's so fortunate to just have that trust. People have to relearn that trust. I'm seeing a lot of people don't even know what that trust is. Maybe they had it as a child and it was lost. Do you have any practices, or, you know, you said you were religious, very religious, and with a metaphysical slant in the Jewish community. Is that what gave you that trust? Or, you know, I mean, this is kind of a really hard question. Like, why do you trust? How do you trust? But
yeah, and it's like, because it, to me, it's like, trust in the divine is like, that's faith, right? Like, that's
right,
what faith
exactly
is. So, it's like, trust in something you can't see. I had a series of sort of like, I don't know, supernatural, metaphysical, like, just spirit contacts, experiences, like, in, I would say, late high school, early college, that just really felt so real and true to me. And I don't know. I mean, honestly, like, the real answer is, in some ways, like, I just feel lucky. I feel lucky to be a person who can have that kind of faith. I don't know why. It feels so, I've never had a crisis of faith. Mm-hmm. You know, I am constantly, like, questioning, you know, the structures that humans build around different faith experiences. But to me, belief in spirit, or, you know, like, I use God because that feels comfortable to me. Belief in God and spirits, and it just doesn't, I don't feel perplexed by it. Yeah, mm-hmm. I just don't experience, like, a crisis in that. Like, I just feel very trusting. I feel like I know what I've experienced. I know what I've seen. I know what I've felt. And, you know, it unfolds to me over time. And I trust. I don't second guess when that information comes to me, or, like, when it speaks to me. I don't second guess it or say, like, maybe it wasn't that, maybe it was this, or, you know. And I'm also, like, a highly rational person. Like the intellectual side and the rational side are important to me, but the spirit part just feels true in that I feel like I can see it. Like it's like a dimension that I see, and because I can see it or feel it or experience it as viscerally as anything in my, you know, in the, I don't know what people say, the 3D world, or I don't know. Right. I know there's different, whatever, you know, but it just is like, oh, that feels true. It makes sense to me that other people don't feel in touch with it if they're not experiencing it. The dimensional quality feels very relevant to me, like in my understanding of it. Like, it's like, these things are dimensions. I think you can be like more or less in touch with different dimensions.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of listeners are, you know, some of them do have that trust, and then a lot of them are still like relearning. I feel like, you know, people probably were born with it. I have, there's no way to prove or disprove that. I have no idea. But I feel like, you know, we're born with that, and it gets conditioned out of us. And it's, you know, I'm always fascinated by people who have always had it in touch, because I'm one of the people who had to relearn it because I was so deeply traumatized and wounded from, you know, the conditioning of society that was like, don't trust that. And then just feeling so lost and despairing and having to relearn that trust. So I guess just, it's cool to have both of us here and be like, okay, you just had it. And some people just have it and it's valid. And then other people can relearn it. And that's valid too.
I think one of the things that I have that was like, that is like a sort of privilege and a luck was that I was not raised, I don't have religious trauma.
Yeah, that's big.
So I think it's huge. You know, it's a really big part of, you know, people's kind of experiences with spirit getting overwritten. And or people having such bad experiences or violent experiences that are like hypothetically taking place in the spirit, you know, the ground of spirituality, that it makes like it very difficult to redevelop an independent relationship outside of that, or to redevelop like language outside of that. You know, I mean, it's essentially like a kind of emotional abuse, right? So, you know, it's a lot of healing that has to take place. And I was really lucky, privileged to be raised, like I was brought up Unitarian Universalist, which is like just a really kind of loosey-goosey religion. So I was really like raised with spiritual framework. Like I was raised in a religious community with a concept of like spirituality and ritual that was pretty experimental and fluid and also empowering. Like I was empowered to understand and participate in and lead ritual in a and be a part of a religious or like spiritual community. And I was also sort of taught that, you know, like one of the premises of Unitarian Universalism is like basically, you know, all faith concepts are valid faith concepts, and they all lead to the same place, which is like a relationship with divine. And it's like, you know, your independent relationship with the divine is your business. Mm-hmm. So I think that is like the, you know, that lays all the foundational framework for me being able to feel free to be on whatever spiritual path felt true to me later on.
That's beautiful. And you know, what's so awesome is having people who just have that trust and that groundedness and that openness. You know, people like you are the kind of people who are helping other people who have that trauma to heal. It's possible to you know, change that and transform it. And it's like, I almost see that people go and visit you and have this amazing session, and then it helps them learn how to attune to and trust that inner truth and guidance for themselves as well. Like that's such a beautiful part of the whole path. And like, just by being in that vibration with you, they can feel it. Like they have to get reattuned because it's not something that they were exposed to, or it wasn't reinforced, you know. And that I think it sounds so simple. Like, me saying it here, it's like, yeah, just go get reattuned, like a tune-up. But it is simple, but, you know, of course, anything easier said than done. but I think that's just so beautiful. Like, that's the kind of people I want to see in the world doing amazing things. People who have that trust and are able to open their arms and intuition and lives to assist others as they're relearning and healing along the way in whatever framework it's through. So yeah, just,
yeah, that's the priestess, like, that's priestess work to me.
Yeah.
Hold that relationship, you know, like the priestess mm-hmm. holds relationship between spirit and community.
Mm. Yeah. Beautiful. Beautiful. So in that, are there any, like, I really love spells and rituals as well. And I know you've been making, like, money magic gem essences and stuff. So what are some of the rituals or magic workings, like practices, that you have or do that you would feel comfortable sharing? And they can be practical too. They don't have to be all woo-woo.
Yeah, like little, I mean, there's the little things that I do, you know, and then there's the kind of like more things that I teach. But a lot of the premise of my work around money magic is around building a money altar, working with money altar. I work really heavily with altars. That's like a large part of my spiritual practice. And so I think having like intentional money altar space is important. And it's something that I, you know, have and work with. I also have like a really active, like spare change, practice. So I like really look for coins everywhere. Mm-hmm. And I find them really actively and I always pick them up. And I do this thing where I like step on them. I say money on the floor, money at the door.
Ooh.
And then I put them in my bra and I like carry them around in my bra with me. And then when I get home, I put them in this cup. I have this like special cup that I put all my coins in. And, so that's like something that I just know is a part of my like money flow experience. I'm just sort of like attuned to money. Another thing is like I give away a lot of money, like dollars on the street. That's like a really important part of my money magic practice to me. Because, you know, to me, it's like magic is just taking responsibility for the fact that like you're an energetic body operating in a field of energetic bodies, and that you're intentionality and action has impact on the energy field around you. So to me, all interaction with money is impacting the energetic flow of money all around the world, and it's impacting the energetic flow of money around your life. So there's things that there's a lot of faith involved and I can't always explain it. I was trying to explain to somebody the other day, like somebody asked me for a dollar. And I was just like, oh, I always give people a dollar if they ask me. That's pretty true. It's not 100% true. But and I was like, that to me, that it's part of how, I mean, partly it's a religious belief. There's a strong belief in Judaism that like if somebody asks you for, if somebody's like at a point in their life where they need to like ask for money on the street, like you should just give it to them without any questions asked. But also that I'm like, I know that giving out money on the street is like part of why I am experiencing emotional and energetic success with my business. Those things feel very intertwined to me in a way that like I don't have to understand, but I know is true.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the money altar, the essences. It's so personal, really. You know, like your sort of like personal magic flow. Like I'm like, I don't know. I have like 10,000 essences and oils and crystals and plants and birds. And I just talk to them all the time. And we're just in conversation, right? Like it's a an independent magical practice is like a conversation. Like what's showing up in your life to align itself energetically with you in your intention. And then also like, you know, whose life are you showing up in to align with them energetically in their intention as well. And just really like noticing that and, you know, making sure that that kind of energetic journey is a part of my daily life, and like a very important part of my daily life. But yeah, I think like if I was going to guide someone to a basic practice around like money magic, I would say like build a little money altar. You know, if you already have an altar space in your house, you can make like a little corner of it that's for money. You can put it somewhere else if you like. But just something very intentional, because it affirms that you are in a process around money. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, it acts as that kind of like affirmation, reminder, reflection. And I think altar work is like very poignant and potent.
Agreed. I love that. And you have some, I don't know where it was when I was looking through your stuff. I think maybe Instagram, you know, you have some pictures of some of your money altar things that are just inspiring and fun and really resonated with those. So people can check that out. Definitely go check that out. But, you know, a lot of people listening do altar work. And so I love that invitation again to just be more conscious and aware around including money on that. And it sounds to me like, you know, you haven't othered money. A lot of people might feel like, oh, money is bad and evil, and there's a lot of weird stuff around that, and, you know, they don't want to have anything to do with it. They're like, oh, money is the root of all evil. Do you want to riff on that? Because I feel like a lot of what you're talking about here is relationships with spirit and money and you and the earth. And it's just like, I feel like it's weaving together. So I'd love to hear your take on money is the root of all evil.
Yeah. I mean, there's a few different things I could say on it. And the number one thing that I would start with is to say that I believe that capitalism is a magic spell.
Oh yeah.
And I believe that it has like extremely powerful practitioners. And, you know, if we do not interject our energy in that conversation in a way that is disruptive, then I don't want to say like we're just letting them win. But, it, you know, there's something about that that feels true. Like it feels important to me for there to be other energetic magical forces and voices in the energetic flow of money globally, because capitalism is not just like a political or economic structure. It's, you know, being energetically imposed. So I would say that number one. There's a quote I saw recently. There's this woman, Carolyn Casey, who has a podcast out here or a radio show called The Visionary Activist. She's like a really wacky astrologer and I really love her. And, I had written down something she said where she said like, it's time for the wise to become wealthy. And I thought like that really sums up my sort of feelings on the matter, which is like, it is important for people who have the capacity to bring economic empowerment and abundance into radical and wise communities. So sometimes I think that people have a fear of what will happen to them if they become wealthy. And it's sort of like a fear that there's no way, it's a fear of themselves, right? Like that there's no way that they could take their integrity with them mm-hmm. into the experience of becoming wealthy, that right. something about it will sort of degrade their integrity, that their integrity is based in struggle. Their integrity is based in potentially like a kind of martyred experience. And that they can't take their politics and their integrity with them into, an experience of being more heavily resourced. And I feel like that is, I don't know, I feel like it's unfortunate because I think that radical communities and wise communities also need resources. And when we don't have resources, we disempower ourselves, right? So this is not to say, it's extremely important to me to say that when people don't have resources, it's not because they're necessarily disempowering themselves, right? Like there's a lot of systemic, there's an outside imposed system, you know, or multiple systems, and systemic oppression is very real. But there are people who are not experiencing systemic oppression, or who are experiencing systemic oppressions in smaller doses and still have the kind of like emotional resources and cultural resources to make money, who choose to live in either like self-imposed poverty or kind of performative poverty, due to some sort of feeling that their integrity is intertwined with that. And I feel like that is mistaken. I feel like it's unfortunate. I also feel like it is like a pretty privileged attitude to take, because if you want to truly be an effective like agent of change in terms of like systemic issues, so much of systemic oppression is economically based. And if you don't have, if you're not like leveraging your individual power to impact that system by like accessing resources it and then empowering, you know, people and communities that you care about, I just think it's a real like missed opportunity. So I think it's can be easier. It's not easy to do that, you know, so I think it can be easier to just be like, money's evil, you know, because it's a way that you don't have to stand in your power and learn how to be responsible in an economic way. And, you know, economic responsibility is one of the most difficult aspects of being a real ally. And I think that that's because so much of the damage has been done in the realm of economics. But I think because of that, it's like reclaiming economic power and you, and your individual economic power in order to like have impact on kind of like systemic oppressions and also to have impact on like, you know, energetic healing of like the world around you is... it's a core piece of the work. So I don't know. I just, I think it's like opting out, right? Like I think to say like, oh, money's evil. Like that's a way to opt out of having to be in the struggle of learning how to be in right relationship with money.
I'm just over here. I'm just like, yes, I resonate with this so much. Thank you. Definitely. You know, and when I think about this a lot, because I've been, you know, in my own path has taken me from a journey of growing up as a child on welfare to of a single mom who then got married and, you know, we got off welfare. But, you know, I've been there, but then also being my family has also been very successful. And so I've seen this sort of full spectrum from my perspective and all of my, you know, inherent privileges and such. You know, I can't claim anything beyond that, of course, but I have seen this spectrum of experience and of not having and of having the resources and of the emotional experience of what it's like emotionally to be conditioned and wired in a way that's like, oh, you don't have access to these resources, not even being aware of them, not even understanding how to get them, to rewiring to such a way that the money coming forced me to face all of that and have to say, wow, do I want to continue to live with this poverty mindset, or am I going to claim my privilege and claim my power and use it to the best of my ability in a way that's responsible and full of integrity in this world to have an impact that is different than the impact that the, you know, status quo hegemonic power holders are having. And in my vision, you know, it's just been such a journey. And I always like to say, you know, to people who are struggling with this, would you rather that, you know, the top richest people like the Koch brothers, would you rather they have all the money, or like that massive amounts of money would be in the hands of priestesses? Like, how fucking powerful would that be?
There's enough money. You know, there's enough money. Like, sometimes I think there's so many different threads. It's difficult to kind of go into it, like this idea of, like, you know, why do people have that block around money? Because there's, you know, there's 30 different avenues to arrive at that same statement. Like, right. Oh, money is evil, you know?
Right.
But it's like sometimes people feel like, oh, they're taking money away from people who need it more. You know, but right. It's like, really, you're not, you know, I mean, it's like, be mindful of the way that you make your money. Right. So it's like, if you are, making your money in a kind of like appropriative or colonial way, then yes, you are taking money, you know, or like that could be, you are taking essentially like business that could, belong to, or like truly does belong to the cultures that it, you know, comes, people who come from the cultures that it comes from. If you're making your money in a way that, like, I don't know, challenge yourself to make money in a way that's like in integrity, mm-hmm. right? And mm-hmm. it's like, if you're making money in a way that's in integrity and is sort of like minimally violent, by which I'm going to say, like, you know, under capitalism, like, there's you know, it's like there's no ethical consumption under late capitalism. There's no ethical earning under late capitalism either.
That paradoxic shadow.
Yeah, like, that's just true. But, you know, if you're doing it in a way where you're really, like, making an intentional effort to minimize that, then you're not taking money, you know, you're taking money from wealthy people or just people who have expendable income and kind of consolidating it under communities of like wise and radical people. And there's plenty of money, you know,
there's so much money.
There is so much money.
There's so much money. Mm-hmm. I love that. And you know, something along that line too is, people who might feel like that, you know, they're working in a way that isn't aligned with their integrity and want to change that, like, it's possible, you know, it's like, just start taking those steps. It's like, and that's something between you and spirit. No one from the outside world can tell you if you're in integrity or not. And that's something like, that's like making that shift from, man, I feel like we're just going to go down some rabbit holes here and
yeah, I mean, there are so many rabbit holes.
Oh, yeah. I know, right? Oh my gosh. But maybe we'll have to have another Money Witch feature. That'd be fun. Yeah, but thank you for sharing your perspective on that. And I know there's so many avenues and threads in that whole thing that you could have your own podcast and go on and on and on forever and never end with the topics of discussing that. but it's true, like, okay, so before I get too wound up here, I'm going to calm down and just kind of connect back to what we were just talking about. And I can only speak from my experience here, but I feel like because it's coming up, it probably resonates for listeners. And around that, some of that mindset around money is evil and versus, you know, the ability to make money and have more resources. I know one of my own biggest fears and sort of shames around that, because as I have held the intention for and taken action for having more money, it has come into my life in ways I never expected. And it's actually really scary, because I feel like by having money that I'm going to be like essentially like kicked out of my communities and people will hate me because of it. And it's such a weird, like, that's my own personal internal shame. And I just feel like Is that something that you've experienced in your own path or you've witnessed? Is this, or, you know, is this common from your perspective?
I think it's common. I mean, ultimately, I feel like, it's different. There's basically like different angles to address that, like depending on, you know, what communities you're a part of and sort of like what your kind of like, you know, ethnic, racial, socioeconomic background and experience is. Like, right. I feel like that issue kind of like manifests in different ways in different communities. I feel like for white people, it is extremely important to take responsibility and own like transparency around whatever your financial reality is. And almost in a way, like there's a thing around, I don't know, kind of like consensual community. Like, it's like when people are like, I don't want to tell people this thing because I'm afraid, like, basically they won't want to be in community with me. Like, I have a lot of Aquarius in my chart. So part of me is just like, well, then I guess, you know, like, it's like, well, you have to tell them and then maybe they won't want to be in community with you. And then mm-hmm. that's just true. I don't know.
You just go from there, right?
You just go from there. Like, I don't know. So, I mean, partly there's that, but I think that, you know, I kind of think like what people are afraid of is like having to figure out how to be in accountability, responsibility, transparency around having money, you know, and just being like, oh, that sounds hard. You know what I mean? Because it is hard. And not necessarily trusting, you know, whatever your community is, that they're going to be able to like go through that process with you. So, I mean, I guess to me, I'm like, it's a more, what it requires is like a more sophisticated analysis on behalf of the individual, but also on behalf of the community, you know? And I think that it's possible to be in a community that has a slightly more sophisticated analysis of, you know, economics, and it's important to kind of contribute to the maturity of the economic conversation of your communities as well. So when you're like showing up to have that conversation in a way that is like nuanced and intelligent and radical and saying like, these are things we need to talk about, it's not just like, oh, everyone lives in a punk house and no one has money and so everyone's cool and that's it. You know, like that's like not even a real thing. You know, like it's like it's important in kind of like maturity to realize like that illusion that, you know, that when you know, it, like that's a very kind of niche experience, but yeah. That's sort of like my experience, right? Coming out of the radical queer community, like mostly white community, is like that, you know, there's some sort of equality, like economic equality or class equality, because everyone's like participating in this similar economic experience. And in actuality, that's not true. You know, like there are people who are living in punk houses who's, you know, who have multi-million dollar trust funds. You know, right. There are people who are living in punk houses who, you know, can't work at all, because of, you know, complex PTSD and, you know, transphobia, right. Et cetera, et cetera. There's people who are living in punk houses who, you know, can go to their $15 an hour, like barista job and like make a decent living and have, you know, there's a whole spectrum of economic experience always, all the time. And like this kind of, I think that this idea of like, there's an illusion that people are all held together in a struggle. And I think like a lot of participation in that kind of struggle culture is performative. And so I think that, you know, it's actually extremely radical to be transparent
and, you know, have conversations about economic differences within communities and economic realities within communities, and be transparent about, like, you know, how you're making money, how much money you're making, you know, what you do with your money, what you think about money, how you want to participate in the community around money, what kind of reparative giving you're doing, like those kinds of things. That's actually a much more radical economic reality to me than kind of just being like in the struggle and feeling like I have intimacy with other people around me because I'm sort of assuming or like promoting this idea that we're struggling similarly, which may or may not even be true.
Wham, bam. Thank you. And, you know, I really hear that it'd be fun to have you back on the show and talk more about money and community, because there's money is one of those taboo things that we just don't have. We're relearning and we're making new radical moves and having to make it up as we go sometimes. So it's really refreshing to just talk here with you about this so candidly and have it just have these opportunities and invitations to new ways of being showing up. So thanks for all the Aquarius in your chart, you know, bringing it. Yeah. And thank you. So, you know, we're going to wrap it up here. So what do you offer and where can people find you?
Okay. So my website is healyourfinances.com, H-E-A-L, healyourfinances.com. And you can pretty much find everything that I'm doing there. The majority of my offering is a service I call intuitive financial coaching. I do 2-hour sessions in person in the Bay and also via Skype all over the country and the world. I also offer, I do taxes, but I take a limited number of clients every year. I do, within intuitive financial coaching, I can coach on business, you know, small business and also like individual financial issues. I also have an educational arm of my business. So I teach 3 workshops in person, and I have one of them online as an online offering. It's called Business Basics for Not So Basic Business Babes. And you can find it off my website. And that workshop is designed for side hustlers, small business owners, independent contractors who want to step more into power in the financial aspect of their business. It is like especially geared towards people who work in healing and creative arts or kind of have healing or creative art type brains. And it covers bookkeeping, small, you know, taxes, incorporation, all those kinds of topics for small business people. I teach a money magic class that I'll hopefully have online by the end of 2018 as well. So you can keep your eye out.
Get on your get on her mailing list, people.
Get on my mailing list off my website. And then I've been lately, I'm doing like this kind of limited edition run of these Money Magic Gem Essences. So those are for sale right now off my website. I don't think it's going to be a permanent offering, but they're there for now. And I'm working on some really fun other product collaborations that are going to unfold for the rest of 2018 that I'm very excited about. And you can mostly find me operating on Instagram. That's my like primary social media platform. I'm at money and then the little period dot, money.witch. And I have a few YouTube, and Natalie and I were talking about how I need to get back on and make some more YouTube videos. So hopefully there'll be more videos going up soon.
Just
but
saying.
I have a handful of videos. Yeah, on YouTube at youtube.com/ moneywitch.
Cool.
And there's some videos on there. I feel like the content is pretty evergreen and relevant. So they're worth watching. And hopefully I'll have some more content up there soon. But I think that's what I've got going on currently.
Beautiful. And all that'll be, well, we'll have them on your show notes there. And amazing. Well, thank you so much. And I have no idea what we'll talk about in the secret episode, but we'll go check it out and we'll see people there. So thank you so much, Jesse, Susanna. This was so fun.
Thank you.
thank you all so much for listening. If you found this episode nourishing or inspiring to you, please share it with a friend or two or three or 10 or 1,000. And if you're on Instagram and you shout us out, make sure you tag us at Dream Freedom Beauty so we can check you out and say thank you. And if you want to support us a little further, you can go on iTunes and leave us a review, or go over to Patreon and or go to patreon.com/dreamfreedombeauty and become a supporter, where you actually, your dollars are actually literally going to help produce this show. You're paying for the editing, you're paying for the hosting, because it's not free to upload files to the internet. And I'm not complaining here. I'm grateful, and I'll keep this show going on my own dollar if I have to, but it's not. It's completely actually over 100% community supported. And it's wonderful. So thank you for feeding the show, and you're paying the show notes writer, you're paying my assistant to get it all uploaded and just keep it going. Without all this teamwork and all your support, I probably wouldn't have made it this far. Let's just be honest. So grateful for you feeding me so I can keep feeding you, and it's amazing. Thank you. See you next week.